Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And here it is. You know, I mean, just when you think you did right, just when you did all your plans, just when you had it all figured out, sometimes it comes right back and it bites you in the butt. And I'm talking particularly about relationships. Relationships, such a difficult thing, huh? Fall in love. And not know what that's about. And have one of these incredible, intense relationships that last for such a long period of time. Or a short period of time. And then, boom, it unfolds. What am I doing here? It's crazy. This person who I thought was such a good person is a bad person. That could knock you off your slats for years. Better yet, how about you get married to somebody and then you discover that they are not your ideal? Well, today I am interviewing an author, Sandra Rhesus, who has written a book called Oh No, He's Just Like My Father. It caught my attention because I can't tell you the number of people I've seen who have that realization after a period of time. So I want to welcome to WBAI, if you're there. Sandra, are you with us?
I am here, Armand.
Oh, good, good, good. And if you would, just because of the nature of these telephone contacts, we're doing this by telephone with California. If you would speak up as loudly as you can with this telephone pickup, it would be our best. Okay?
Okay.
There you go. Thank you.
Sure.
And Sandra, so I mean, how is it? How does it happen? What do you think it's a spell that happens to people where they wind up in relationships with somebody just like their dad?
I believe that it's very unconscious that we do this, but what happens is we meet someone and all of a sudden the bells and the whistles are going to go off, we're going to have that chemical reaction to them, and it clouds our vision. We don't know what we're really seeing because we really don't know what we're looking for. And then when the realization hits, the chemicals have calmed down, the realization hits, then we see it and we go, oh, what have I done?
Okay, so you're saying the chemistry clouds the vision of reality, that the chemical reaction initially, which could be passion or it could be an intellectual meeting of the minds, but whatever the chemistry is, you know, the dopamine and the serotonin, they kind of mix together and you add a little of this and a little of that to it and it feels good, then you get some endorphins and you get all the nice stuff. That's at the beginning period of time. And you're saying it is the passions that cloud the vision?
Correct. It's a combination of that and not realizing what we're looking for and not looking for. Because if we unconsciously are looking for our fathers or our mothers or a combination of both, and we don't realize that, then we don't have the information to look further than the endorphin rush.
So you're saying that with some people, they have an unconscious program to relocate someone just like their fathers or mothers. And they're not actually looking for their father or mother because their father could be dead. So if you want to look for your father, go to a gravesite. They're looking for someone who is a replication of or someone who will produce the feelings of. What are they looking for? I mean, obviously people don't want to have sex with their parents.
Correct, but they're used to a certain type of dynamic in a relationship. So if their father was emotionally absent, then what they're going to do is they are going to look for someone unconsciously that is emotionally unavailable because that's what they know, that's what they're comfortable with. And it's a draw because they know how to act, they know what to expect, what not to expect. Everything is there and it makes it fairly easy. If a relationship is difficult at the beginning, because it's making you grow, then it's unlike your family, and it's a very good thing.
What do you mean it's unlike your family?
If the relationship, if you meet someone and you have to grow, you have to get up to speed on what a healthy relationship is, then that's really what you're looking for. If the relationship is too comfortable, it means you're back in the past and you're recreating that. So
you're saying watch out for the comfort zone.
Yes.
What? But, you know, the passions usually don't come from the comfort zone. Well, maybe they do. Maybe they do. I think you're making a good point there, Sandra. Just wanted to let people know this is Sandra Reishus, who is from California, R-E-I-S-H-U-S, author of Oh No, He's Just Like My Father, and is as clicky as it sounds, as cute as that title sounds, the book is valuable because it addresses the issue of why you wind up in the same, doing the same stuff that you did when you were a kid, having the same relationship with the same kind of person over and over again. So Sandra, let's go back.
Sure.
A person searches out, if you find your comfort zone, if you find just the right kind of guy. So let's say you're a man who likes people who are, you know, who likes people who are kind of more submissive than dominant, and you go to your comfort zone, then that's your comfort zone. That's where you're going to feel your passion. That's your comfort zone.
Correct.
And if you're a woman who likes to have men who are, you know, either going to dominate them or be submissive, that's your comfort zone. If you do the same thing, like Buckaroo Banzai said, if you do what you always did, you're going to get what you always got. You get the same results.
That's
those
right.
Are the ones that you say are most likely to be a replication of the early childhood struggle.
Yes. And then what people do when they realize then that they have gotten themselves in the same dynamic pattern that they had as a child, then they either get out of the relationship, they try to change the relationship, or they just settle and say, well, this is what a marriage is like, or this is what a relationship is like, and you have to put up with this. And anytime anybody says that to themselves, that's when they have just slipped back into the past and they're not willing to grow.
So there are three options. You
yes.
know, you look at it and you say, oh, my gosh, what did I do to myself? And you get out.
Yeah.
Or you say, oh, my gosh, what did I do to myself? And you stay in and you say, let me correct it. Or the third one is, oh, well, that's the way it is, so I'll just settle into it. And then you actually become your mother related to your father. You actually enter that relationship where you replicate your childhood relationship.
You either replicate your mom's role or your dad's role.
As a woman, you could replicate your dad's role?
You certainly can. And the person that you hook up with in a relationship or a marriage, then it's not always easy to see your mother's traits in your mate, if you're a female, because feminine traits are often harder to pick up in males. And so you may not realize you're doing it until down the road.
Yes, until down the road, and you say down the road, and suddenly it appears. So a child, let's go back to the beginning of existence for a person. They're there, and they're looking at their parents, and they're looking at their parents' function, and they think that whatever their parents doing is what the norm is, because if you're a baby, you're not comparing your parents to anybody else.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Now you see that, and it looks either happy or unhappy, but to you, the child, if you're an infant, you don't know the difference between happy and unhappy. You know you don't feel good, but you don't know there is feeling good. You don't know what it's like to have loving parents. You just have parents like the ones you have.
Correct.
That sets some kind of an imprint in your mind. Later you learn, oh, it doesn't have to be this way. And so why would you repeat it? Why would you go back to find them? Why would you go back to the miserable one?
Well, again, because it's comfortable, and we don't really know we have other options. We intellectually think we have other options, and oftentimes we'll just do the opposite, thinking that's our other option. But where are all the choices in the middle? There's no options in the middle. If your dad, you know, scrimped and saved every penny and wouldn't let you spend a dime, and then you went out and married somebody who spent money freely and was always in debt, then those are the only two options. There's nothing in the middle there that you can choose, such as somebody who has a balance and spends and saves both. And so that's where you get caught.
how do you get caught? I mean, what is the manifestation of being caught?
You get caught in either doing the same, picking a man who is real tight with his money, or doing the opposite and picking someone who is careless with his money. So there's, you only have those two options.
So now we have a very interesting thought here. You either pick the same or you pick the opposite. How could being the opposite be the same as picking the same? You know, how could picking somebody the opposite as your dad be the same as picking somebody like your dad? Like, I know a man, I remember a man, who said his mother was very, very thin. And he said he could never go out with thin women. And I said, why? He said, because my mother was very, very thin. Now, I knew in my mind, as a therapist, he was as cathected or as connected to his mother as would be somebody who says, I only want thin women because my mother was thin.
Correct.
Because he demands an opposite. Because if somebody says, I must have the opposite, they're in effect saying, I am connected, and they're almost saying, I want the same person.
Yes, they
but
are.
It's hard to understand, you know?
It is, unless you think that this is the only role model I have to go off of. And so I either pick somebody that's thin, or I pick someone who isn't thin. And that's the only choices I have, because that's my only role model. How about, you know, if he didn't want to pick a thin woman, and so he picked women that were overweight, where's the middle part? You know,
right.
Where's the middle? Where's somebody that's in good shape? Or why not go for the person and it doesn't matter what their body looks like?
Well, now that brings us to another issue. You know, the popularity of psychotherapy has kind of led to these relationships with two people who are in therapy where you have one person yelling at the other person, you're just like my father, I can't stand you, I hate you. Or you're just like my mother, I can't stand you, I can't hate you. Now that's become almost acceptable nowadays, and of course that sounds kind of bananas. Because if somebody says to you, you're just like my father, So find out I'm not. I'm not your father, so behave differently. Or you're just like my mother, being used as a weapon against someone, saying you're wrong because you're just like my mother. Well, you married me that way. You know, you picked me.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this wind up? You know, whose fault is it if the mate is the same as the parent that you despised? How does it become the mate's fault?
Well, I don't really think we should place a blame. I don't think it's anybody's fault, because we only do what we can do at that point. So if all we knew was to pick this type of person, that's all we knew, okay? And so what you have to do then is you have to say, okay, I've done this. It's not this person's fault. I've done this, and so I'm the one that needs to remedy that, and hopefully my partner will work with me. And doing that, because if you're yelling at each other, you know, you're just like my father. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. I mean, it sounds like a couple of kids, right? It doesn't sound like mature adults.
Right.
And so you have to get to a point where you can actually talk to your partner and say, you know, what's coming up for me is I'm realizing that, you know, this, but when you do this, whatever this is, then I feel like I'm, you know, back with my dad. And so I need to look at this and figure out why I'm reacting this way.
Well, could you take us back for a minute and bring us to the beginning of this? You know, how do we set up this whole concept of parenting and where we stand? What is the parent trap? How would you define it?
The parent trap is taking everything that we learned in childhood. Before our brains were formed, we, you know, our brain wires got connected in a certain way. And so we look at our parents and we say, just like you said, okay, this is the way you do relationships. This is the way you interact. This is the way the world is. And so as you grow up, those wires are still connected in that way. And so what psychotherapy does is it goes in and it makes new connections for the wires. And that's why it is as beneficial as it is. And you have two people that come in that both recognize how their family systems have influenced them. And when those two people walk in the door, I mean, it's just a wonderful experience because they both want to grow, they both want to change, they both want to look at it. And it's not easy work, but if you're willing, if you're both willing to do it, then it brings just absolutely wonderful results.
And the actual work of it is, I mean, what specifically is the work? And some people do it on their own. Do they always need psychotherapy? Because, you know, a lot of people want to try to fix themselves.
And you can to a certain point, is my belief. But there are things that you don't realize you're doing that someone objective needs to point out to you that maybe you can hear from this person you can't hear from a spouse. And I think that's the value of seeing a therapist is having that person say, oh, hold it, you know, or what did you just mean by that? Without the history of the relationship of each other interfering and all the past hurts and all of that. So kind of a referee at times, a referee, a teacher, an enlightener, a person that says, whoa, stop. You're going too far here.
You know, there are times when we learned in early psychoanalytic training, and I'm sure you did too, there's a thing called transference. And transference is when you are reacting to someone as if they are your parent. They call that transference, and they do that in therapy, and it's a therapeutic thing because in a relationship with a therapist, quite often a client or a patient will react to the therapist as if the therapist is the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And they will project what they call putting these feelings on a therapist, like you're really mad at me, you really hate me, that are really feelings that belong to the parent. But that's not the part that I think is so interesting. What I think related to your book is interesting is countertransference. And countertransference, according to psychiatry, is when the person responds to the transference, responds to the role they're being put in, as if they are in that role, as if they are that person, even though it is not by nature their role to be that person. So, for example, if you love somebody and that somebody is a man and that man is just like your father, but he wasn't, you know, you love him and you see him like your father, but he's not like your father, really. Eventually, he will become like your father in response to you. Do you think that holds true in your, from where you see it?
I think oftentimes it does. An example would be someone who, a female who is used to taking care of people. And marries this man who's fine, independent, can take care of himself, and she keeps mothering, and pretty soon he just kind of settles in and starts accepting it.
And then? So she's used to mothering people. She could be somebody who serves people, and she's used to doing that role in her family, and she did this role with her father, and so you know, now here's somebody who comes along who's really independent. He doesn't need it, but he likes the idea that his dinner's being cooked and his laundry's being cleaned, and he gets comfortable with that and then suddenly gets to expect it on some level. And at this point, he kind of turns around and he joins the role of being the person who is expecting the goodies without giving back, you know, the kind of reward that was hoped for the whole time.
Yeah, who was exactly her father, because her father took the nurturing from her mom. So he's now become her father.
It's a very, very difficult thing, you know. It's very difficult to even hear it, I'm sure, for many people. Now, what would you call your mate's parent trap?
Well, you know, the same thing. You always have to look at what he's bringing forward from his background. So it's real important to look at his parents' dynamics between the two of them and how they treated the children, because oftentimes when we get married, we unconsciously slip into the role in our marriage that our parents had. And so once you do that, you're just recreating their lives. You're not having a life of your own. And so it's very important to see how they did it.
Well, you're saying one of two things now. Either you are recreating the role of your parents with each other, or you're recreating the role of you with your parent.
Correct.
Which one is it?
It can be either.
It can be either. So, yes. In other words, if I had if I had a mother who was, you know, who never did anything, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would be related to somebody who never did anything. But then I could eventually take the role of my father who gets angry at my mother for never doing anything.
Correct.
Is that kind of it?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, Sandra, what put you on this road? Did you wind up with one of these just like my father men? I'm sure you did.
I did. Of course I did, because it was the only thing I knew.
Yeah, how did it happen? When did you make your discovery? Was that through therapy? Oh, he's just like my dad.
I did make it through therapy. And what happened with me was that my mother was a very, extremely slow driver. And I was going down the freeway one day, and it was just pouring down rain, and people are passing me going, you know, really fast, and I'm driving 30 miles an hour in the slow lane, and I just had this thought that went, I'd become my mother. And I had to laugh at myself, but then I also thought, wait a minute, have I? And so started thinking about that and started investigating that first, and then realizing what the pull and what the draw was to recreate my childhood and both becoming like my mother and choosing men like my father.
Wow.
And once I got that insight and that clarity, it just made all the difference in the world to me. My life is completely different now.
Now, your life was different. Did you wind up going back to your mate and saying, hey, I'm sorry I kept putting you in this role of my father. I'm now going to take you out of that role, and let's see how our relationship can survive. Or did you just dump the bum?
I dumped the bum.
I thought so.
because I had married somebody so like my father that there was nothing to do to change it. And
yeah.
he expected the marriage to be like his parents' marriage.
And his parents' marriage was nobody argues, everybody's fine?
Yes, and very, very traditional. The man goes out and makes the money, and the woman stays home. And I remember one time, you know, I made dinner, put it on the table. My husband got up from the watching TV, sat down and ate. We were finished. He got up and went back and in the chair, started watching TV, and I had to, you know, clean the table and wash the dishes. And I thought, you know, I didn't sign up for this. I don't want a recreation of his parents, because that's what his parents did. And there was just not going to be any getting around that.
Well, you know, you say that, and yet, you know, I think about the number of people. Therefore, almost all couples who come to counseling should break up, because almost inevitably, every couple is in this trap. You know, I see very few who are on the verge who are having great difficulties with each other. Every couple who has it, if you take a close look at it, and if they go into therapy and you examine it closely, they're going to be transferential relationships where, you know, the woman is related to her father and the man is related to his mother, or vice versa. And if that's the case, then they better stay out of therapy, because if you stay out of therapy, you're going to get the insights that are going to make you run away.
Now, I see. I disagree with you on that. Because
good, because I disagree with me on that.
because if they come in and they are both willing to work on it, then, hey, we've got something to work with here, okay? Or we can help them say, okay, there's this that's lacking, but there's this that makes up for it, okay? Because some people work well, like in a parent-child relationship. It works for both of them. It might need to be tweaked a little bit here and there, but overall it works. Okay.
Talking with Sandra Reiches, author of Oh No, He's Just Like My Father, a paperback, available from McGraw-Hill. That's there, very worthwhile. But Sandra, let's go a step further. You know, if you have a couple and they have the sloppy relationship that includes a lot of passion because they're doing that which is comfortable, which therefore represents some early childhood replication of a parental relationship, very often when you pull out all of the illusions and you take the masks off and they see each other for the first time, the passion disappears. Because they say, oh, you're not like my father. You're not my father. You're just a nice person, and I like you very much. And I think what people have to be prepared for is when you go from a dysfunctional relationship to a functional relationship, there's a transition, there's a period of time that you need in the middle where you become friends first, and then from that you reconnect being lovers. Do you know? But I think what happens in the therapeutic process, you're gonna fight it out, but don't quit. Stay in there. Stick in there for the long haul. And then go through the part where you become friends. And then when you become friends and you may feel passionless with each other, go through that because the passion reemerges. But it takes quite a bit of courage.
It does. And I believe therapy takes courage. And it's for strong people. And it's for people who are willing and can realize, grab a hold of the idea that it's a process. It's not going to get fixed in 3 sessions. It's not going to get fixed in 2 months. It's a process. But you're going to see growth along the way.
You know, Sandra, we're going to take calls in a couple of minutes, but let me ask you one more thing. Sex and sex dynamics. You're a sex therapist, aren't you?
Correct.
All right. Now, as a sex therapist, you focus on that issue. Do people have better sex when somebody is like their parent or not like their parent?
It depends on how
good-looking your parent is. No.
They are. No. It really depends on who this is, on, you know, what the sexual dysfunction is or the sexual issue is. Sometimes it can be, and other times it's not.
But don't you think that somewhere in that hidden valley of the veil of the non-parent or the parent, the person who doesn't look like your parent when you meet them, but they are like your parent, don't you think people have more sexual passion towards that person than they do towards the person who is not like their parent? It would seem like that's a shoo-in, you know, not that you're looking to have sex with your parent, but the energy, the cathartic exchange, the thing that takes place between the two of you is based on that early connection that's hidden.
And again, it was the connection with the parent, was it full of trauma? Was it, you know, did you have a rager as a parent? There was always that excitement. Did you always have to be heightened all the time, emotionally, feeling-wise, to feel anything at all? Which then is going to say, okay, well, this is the kind of sexual experience that works for you because of what you were exposed to.
Oh, I see. So it could be either one. I mean, it could be that you had that it's not a passionate response that you have to somebody because you didn't have a passionate relationship with your parent.
Yes.
Well, that's really great stuff. I am sure there's going to be loads of response to this. The name of the book, again, is Sandra Reishus, R-E-I-S-H-U-S, the name of the book, Oh No, He's Just Like My Father. I recommend it. I like it. You could fill a lot of parts that you could fill in, and you could kind of find out for yourself how to get yourself out of your trap. She also tells some very good stories here. And then there's another book that Sandra did as well. What's the other book?
It's called Oh No, I've Become My Mother.
I've Become My Mother. Both of those sound good, and I'd like to have you back here at one point, and we'll talk about that part, Sandra. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take your telephone calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We're going to take a break. I'll play you some music, and when we come back, we'll take your calls.
Thank you.
because I ended that too sharply, so I'm going to have to You're going to hear a little more of that as we tail out. That's Sonny Rollins and Dizzy Gillespie and Sonny Stitt, and they were doing this terrific piece called After Hours with his great piano introduction. My dear friend Sonny Rollins is going to be back here sometime in September, October. He's going to be at Carnegie Hall. You could call Carnegie Hall and check with them and see. I've already got my tickets, and I know that we're going to get him somehow through the good graces of Kent Robert Shaw. We will get Sonny in this studio, on this station, promoting the tour. What an exciting thing. What a wonderful thing. WBAI. You know, now one of the things, or a point that comes to my attention is that very often, you know, why? Why would we be doing this? Why do we do this destructive thing? Well, you know, here's the idea. Harville Hendrix said that we choose the people who are like our parents because we are trying to undo the damage that we did. And this is a very interesting theory, and it's a good theory. It says if you are powerless with your father because your father ignores you, for example, right, and doesn't pay attention to you, and you wind up and you go get a mate who's just like your father, who ignores you and doesn't pay attention to you, then what you wind up doing is you improve yourself so that you're not so sensitive to being ignored by a man. You see, you actually get these people and you go get them, and they're like punching bags. You know, you practice on them. You're practicing not to be as vulnerable. And so what happens if you pick somebody just like your mother? Let's say you have a mother who is emotionally a terror, you know, who screams all the time and attacks you. Why would you, as a mate, pick that kind of person? Well, you pick that kind of a person because some part, and you had a mother just like that. You do that because you're trying to learn to not be so sensitive and so crippled by that behavior. And in effect, they are teaching you, they're teaching you, no, this is just a behavior. And you're saying, well, I don't have to feel like a little powerless nobody anymore, like a child. Now, the beauty of it is, if you do that with someone, and that someone gives you something that reflects what your parent gave you, the negative part of what your parent gave you, and you do get over it, then that person winds up stopping doing these things because you no longer need them to do it. You see, once you've gotten past it, the behavior changes on both parts. That's why in relationships, in couples therapy, very often in families, people talk about going into therapy and they want to get everybody in therapy. And sometimes you just say, look, one of you go in therapy. And if only one of you do therapy, all three of you will get better. Because if you change one element of it, usually change all three elements. But I'm not saying that therapy always works, because therapy doesn't always work. Sometimes therapy is junk. Sometimes you should take a vacation. You know, sometimes you should go off to Turkey, you know, and fly around there on the half moon. They have a half moon, don't they? It's a half moon. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another one of your calls. Let's take one of your calls. You're on the air. Hi, you're on. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. It's Leora.
Hello, Leora.
I found this very fascinating, and it brought me way back in time. Of course, I thought of Harville Hendrix for a moment, but long before Harville, when I was a little, I married, was like a child bride, and I married a person who was very kind in the engagement for the year or whatever. And after we got married, one day there was something, and there was this stonewalling or silent treatment. This is long before Harville, and out came little Leora, young, 22. Oh my God, I married my mother.
You found out you married your mother.
Yes, but I said it. The husband that I married was silent. My mother always gave me the silent treatment. And when I got married, I said to myself, I married my mother because I'm getting the same thing. So the key point here is The number one, in terms of what was spoken about, is who's choosing who? It's a little Leori. It's a little boy and girl. And, of course, it didn't change, but the point is when it came to the grown-up aspect of intimacy, I became my father in terms of my husband being the mother, and that was very good there. So my request is to help people become aware of who they are when they're choosing the person. Could you talk a little about that?
Sure. Thank you very much for calling in, Leora. I will. Thank you. Thank you so much, as usual. Very kind. Very good. Now, yes, of course, now, so there becomes a question, how do you choose better? But, you know, you can't. It's so sneaky. It's sneaky. It's like you think that this person can't at all be like your father, right? Because you wonder, let's say you had a stingy father, right? Stingy. Never gave anything, never took care of you, never gave you extra time. And you find somebody who is not stingy. Well, we know about the opposite. The opposite is like getting the same thing. But let's say that they're just somewhat generous. According to a lot of what we understand, Harville Hendricks and others, you will turn your mate into the stingy guy. You'll turn him into it. It's like, let's say you find somebody who's not jealous, and you hate jealousy. You will turn your mate into somebody who's jealous, so that you could wind up dealing with this inner dynamic that you have to get rid of before you die, and before you pass it on to any more generations. You know, before you know, it gets somewhere embedded in your genes, somewhere it's encoded, and instead of passing it on, you know, you hope you get a little better. And, you know, if you don't do it better, then your kids see you the way you are, and then they repeat the pattern, but maybe they'll do it better. Maybe that's what the job of all children is, to undo the mistakes of the parents. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. While I was listening to your program, I was thinking of my marriage and my relationship. My husband was raised by his mother. His father died when he was 5. She never remarried. What influence did that have, or does that have generally, when a child is raised by one parent and the other parent is totally missing?
Well, tell me about that. Tell me about how you could make sense out of that, because, you know, I have a feeling you know the answer to this.
I'm not sure, but...
Take a guess.
Well, for one... He had expectations of me that were just like what his mother did for him.
Yeah.
And there was no conflict about that at all. But I think that my husband had problems in terms of discipline for the children, how to be a parent.
And how was he as a husband?
He was a good guy.
And what happened to him?
He died.
When did he die?
He died 2 years ago.
Oh, I still hear it in your voice.
We were married for almost 60 years.
60 years?
60.
Oh, my God. Are you going to teach us lessons? We can't teach you about love. 60 years. And what, I mean, he died just 2 years ago. How did he die?
He had a bad heart, and he was in his late 80s.
Whew. How do you get by day to day?
With great difficulty.
I hear.
With great difficulty, and I think that people have expectations that when they lose someone, I'm Jewish, and the Jews give themselves a year to be in mourning, and it's not fair. It's not a year. I don't know how... I'll never forget him or forget the feelings or the remembrances or all kinds of things. And there were some negatives, too, in our relationship. But, and we had problems. I don't think there's anything that's ideal. But the reality is that I could tell that he didn't have a father.
What was his name?
George.
George?
Not Bush.
Yeah, George. Hey, listen, did you call him George?
Yes, I did. Why?
If George could hear you in the ethers...
I can't hear you.
If George could hear you in the ethers, if George somehow, in whatever place that his self is at this moment, could hear you right now...
Yes.
And you could say something to him directly, what would you like to say to him? Let's say somehow, you know, we're going out into space, and who knows how far our voice is going to go. But
yeah.
If you could talk directly to George right now, what would you say to him?
I miss you.
Yeah.
I miss you a lot.
And the thing I miss the most, George.
Just him.
Yeah.
His being here.
You know, I read a beautiful thing. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Edith.
Edith, I want to thank you for showing us about relationships instead of just talking about them, you know, showing us about love lost. And I want to thank you for that, and I want to thank you for your courage and being on the show with us. And I got something recently. It was a book written by people who were widows and who was a widow, and she wrote one beautiful, beautiful thing that I thought
What's the name of the book?
Oh, boy. You know, I would love to get you the name of that book, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it. Oh, call my office, and I'll get it for you, Edith.
Okay.
Call my office at 757-4488.
Right.
And I will get it for you, okay? But
okay.
One of the poems in this book, she said, was go to the beach and write his name on the sand near the water. And let the tide take the name into the ocean. And it's a special feeling. It's a special feeling. I've told that to a few people who have done that. And they feel blessed by the very act of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get down to the water nowadays?
No, I can't.
Uh-huh.
No.
Well, you'll find a way. Edith, do call my office. I promise I'll get you the book.
But I want to make a comment.
Sure.
To you. We all know about the roles we play and the connections with our parents, but what does generally happen with someone who teaches the person the roles that they play as a man or a woman if the parent is missing? Where do people get their information from?
Yeah, I understand the question. The information is there because you make it up, you know. As a kid, you make up who that parent is.
Oh.
You make it up in your mind, you see. And when you make it up, that's what you replicate, what you made up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what children do. They make up the person.
Right.
Whether it's true or not, they make it up and then they replicate it. Like, I know a lot of people who grew up without a father, and they, you know, they created that their father was this big hero who ran around the world doing wonderful things, and they did that because they really didn't want to deal with the grief of being without a father.
Mm-hmm.
But a father was really not one of these guys. He was just some guy who was just hanging out, you know what I mean? He wasn't
mm-hmm.
But because they created a hero, they went on from there only being attracted to heroes and people who were acting in heroic ways. You see, because they had this image of their father that they created.
Mm.
So I hope that answers your question, Edith.
Yes, in a way it does. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Right.
And don't forget to call. I'll get you the book.
Right.
212-209-2900 is the number here. We're taking your calls. Touches my heart. You know, whenever I hear people, I mean, I interview a lot of people, and I interview a lot of people who are, 80, 85 years old that come by. And when they talk about lost love, it just puts chills in me every time to think of how you get by. I met a man yesterday who talked to me about his living with his dad, and his mom died, and he was talking about how his dad just walks around the house like somnambulistically, you know, like he's sleepwalking, almost like, and he tells people, you know, I'm waiting to die. So I say to him, bring him in to see me. Bring him in to see me because I'd like to talk to him because, you know, even if it's true you're waiting to die, maybe there's something he could do in honoring his love and his love with his wife before he does go. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Steve.
Hello, Steve.
I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller.
Hey, Steve, congratulations. How long have you been a listener?
Oh, a long time now. A long time. But I have a question.
Sure.
I know you covered this, but by trade I'm a bus driver, and there are times when I haven't been able to listen to your show.
Sure.
And I know you covered this, but unfortunately I haven't heard your response to it. Armand, what, in your opinion, what determines the sex of a child?
What do you mean, what determines it? Chromosomally? What determines it?
Yeah, I mean, why is it that some people have boys and some have girls?
Oh, there's so much to it. You know, and I think there was a whole program we covered on it about how it's mostly genetic choices, but there are emotional parts as well that play a big dynamic force. Now, tell me why you're asking this. Are you having a baby, or are you planning on having a baby, or are you a child who wondered why you became out as a man as opposed to a woman?
No, it's not that. It's planning to have a... Eventually, I'm going to get married, but I would like to have a son.
And so you want to plan genetically the best odds for having a son?
Well, I guess so.
All right, so that's an interesting bit of research to do. Do you do any research on the internet? Have you
I'm good with it.
Okay, and if you're good with it, on the internet you'll see there is a couple of references I do in programs that I've done in the past. So the archives are up there, and I think we do talk about that. But I think as well, as you do your research, you can actually select. But I want to tell you something. I want to ask you a question. Why do you want to have a son?
Well,
why a son? Why not a daughter? Why not leave it up to chance?
I think I can help a son better than I could a daughter. I could be wrong in terms of, future choices, things like that, making the right decisions. Then, of course, it would be nice to have a buddy so I can play some catch, you know, some softball or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is you as a child were a lonely child. Is that not true?
Basically, yeah, but I had a lot of friends.
Yeah, but you were lonely anyway.
Yeah.
And how, because there was something missing at home.
There was a lot missing at home.
Yes. And the thing that was missing at home was the one big buddy that everybody, every man hopes for. And that's your dad.
Well, that's true. He was one of these absent fathers.
Yeah. I understand. And that's so painful. So there you are with this vacuum. And here's what I'm saying to you. I'm saying that there's an emptiness in you for your dad that you're hoping to fill with a child. Believe it or not. And a male child, because that's going to fill the part of you. You think that's going to fill the part of you. And it gets a little more complicated. The way it fills the part of you is it actually gets you to become the dad that you always wanted to have and with a son that you always wanted to be. So it gets so complicated that the very first thing I would say to you is, since you're going to go on this, go on a little more self-discovery. Find out about yourself. Jump into those feelings about your dad from early childhood, deal with the feeling of his absence, and you'll find at the end of that that you won't need to have the child deliver to you the missing part of you. You'll deliver it to yourself. You know, even though you have friends, and you'll be able to take from your friends as well. And there's this other thing that I also know about you is you feel awkward around women. You feel awkward around them. You feel clumsy around women.
I just want to say this. I don't see them in a very beautiful light, especially today.
How do you see them mainly as?
Guilty.
What do you mean? They're guilty?
Yeah.
For what?
They're guilty of having the power that they shouldn't have. They're able to find out anything about anybody.
The power they have to find out anything about anybody by what? Withholding sex?
No, nothing to do with sex. Just as a matter of not being what they used to be, an innocent young lady. They're no longer that.
Now they are too. They're too perceptive. They look inside you. You try to keep things private, and they won't even let you keep it private. They're invasive, and you don't feel comfortable around them
as much.
But you want to find one and marry them and have a baby.
Yeah.
So what kind are you going to find?
I guess one that I'll accept.
And that would mean somebody who would be quiet, who would not challenge you too much. But I'll tell you something. What's your first name?
Steve,
you sound like an awfully beautiful man to me with a very hurt child inside of you. There's just a little guy inside you who's hurt. So I would be willing to bet that if I looked inside you, I would just see a kid who's crying who's beautiful. And that's what I would see. And that's all you have. You have nothing else. You got some anger inside there that you don't like. You got other parts of you you don't like. Any woman who was able to perceive, truly perceive and look inside you and get through your defenses would be a lucky person. So you don't have so much to hide as you think. You could afford to let yourself just bare yourself and let them look as much as they look. You know, what are they going to see? You're a beautiful guy.
Yeah, well,
you got to take a chance and see yourself better.
All right.
You know,
all
Steve,
right, so.
So, Steve, do a little more research and you'll find out how to have a male child, but don't expect a male child to fill that empty spot in you. It's going to be filled by you looking at you.
All right.
All right, my friend?
All right. Listen, Armand, thanks a lot.
And thanks for calling in after all these years.
I wondered how come I held off for so long.
You're amazing. Thank you.
Okay.
Sounds like you're ready to change.
Okay.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more stuff. And what will I be doing? And if you want to listen to today's program again, you could hear it at thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org, either one of those two. You can send me an email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'll let you go with some Dizzy Gillespie, Sonny Rollins, and Sonny Stitt, Michael G.